Welcome to Rehash.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rehash, a Web3 podcast. I'm your host, Diana Chen. And today we're speaking with Andy Boyan, founder of Infinity Keys, a gamified rewards platform for creators and brands to better engage with their community. In this episode, we'll be talking about all things games, what distinguishes a good game from a bad game, pros and cons of gamifying incentives, and how games or game theory can be used across the Web3 space. Andy was nominated by Karsten and voted onto the podcast by Karsten, Daisy Aliato, Christina Beltramini, Ellie Dotz, and myself. Before we dive into our conversation, here's a quick word from the Web3 projects that helped make this season possible.
Social media wasn't designed for ads and algorithms. It was made for people. And at Lens Protocol, we're putting people back in control. We're not looking for users' data. We're here to build a community of collaborators, builders, artists, and dreamers ready to unlock a new world of social media. This isn't just an app. It's a flourishing ecosystem of platforms and experiences owned and operated by the developers and creators who are bringing it to life. In the Lensverse, you don't just own your content. You own everything. Your data, your connections, the value you bring to the table, it all stays in your possession, exactly where it should be. As a creator, the Lens ecosystem offers a new set of tools for connecting with your audience. Your data is truly portable and belongs to you. Post once and distribute everywhere in the Lensverse. You can even take your followers with you from app to app. As a developer, you can skip right past building the base layers and scaling your users by plugging your new app directly into Lens's existing infrastructure and community. So whether you create with a brush or a camera, sound waves or lines of code, it's time you got your due. Come create the future of social media with us on Lens Protocol. Lens is the last social media handle you'll ever need.
Have you seen how epic Ambire Wallet is?
How epic it is?
Yeah, cue the music. Ambire is a Web3 wallet that makes crypto self-custody easy and secure for everyone. Instead of relying on clunky seed phrases, you can create an account with the hardware wallet or username and password, secure it with two-factor authentication, and regain access with Ambire's cloud recovery. Need to pay out some contributors or execute a bunch of trades? No problem, Chief. Queue up as many transactions as you want, and when you're ready, execute the entire batch at the same time, paying gas only once. You can even prepay for gas with stablecoins or Ambire's native wallet token, which will get you some cash back. Without ever leaving the Ambire interface, you can manage assets from over a dozen chains, safely migrate them with Ambire's built-in bridge, and seamlessly interact with dApps like Uniswap, Aave, and Snapshot, all within the same transaction. Plus, Ambire is constantly growing their dApp catalog with trusted partners and collaborating with builders who want to establish the new standard for smart contract wallets. So, pretty epic, huh?
Yeah, I already know all that though. I've had an Ambire wallet for months.
And you didn't tell me?
You never asked.
To get involved and truly own your assets, go to ambire.com. How was your day?
Bad.
What happened?
I bought some NFTs and then they just disappeared.
Sounds like your NFT creator should have used NFT.storage.
NFT dot what?
NFT.storage. Come on, I'll show you. With NFT.storage, anyone can easily upload their NFT data to a decentralized and reliable storage network completely for free.
Wow, how does it work?
Well, instead of relying on centralized and impermanent storage solutions, NFT.storage uploads your files to IPFS and Filecoin. These are powerful peer-to-peer networks that are made for the decentralized web. Thanks to IPFS's unique storage system, you can be confident that once your files are uploaded, they'll be accessible from anywhere in the world for as long as you'd like. They're already trusted by some of the biggest names in Web3, like OpenSea, Magic Eden, and Rarible. By adding files to these networks for free, NFT.storage is helping to turn proper NFT data management into a public good. This will ensure that NFTs will remain accessible and secure in the long run, so you won't get rugged again.
Gee, so I just upload my files and NFT.storage will take care of the rest?
Now you're getting it!
Go to NFT.storage today to upload some NFT data of your own, for free. And be sure to follow NFT.storage on Twitter, at NFTDOTStorage.
So without further ado, here is our guest, Andy. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I was also voted on by myself. I did vote for myself with some of my rehash voting power.
Oh, I must have missed that, but thank you for the transparency. Before we get started, I just want to draw people's attention to your outfit because it is absolutely incredible. You sort of teased that you were going to do this, but I didn't know if you were actually going to pull through. It is a CryptoKitties onesie throwback to OG crypto times. This was a huge thing back in 2017 for people who weren't around back then. Can you tell the story of how you acquired this incredible onesie?
This is in 2019. It was NFT NYC, and it was the bleakest of the crypto winter, but I had just started going to crypto conferences and NFT NYC. NFTs weren't a thing at that time, but I went because I was working with Status.im, a great privacy-focused project, and we just wanted to network and meet with a lot more people and start getting the platform out. So I got a chance to go and meet a ton of the, you know, major NFT projects that we see now in their infancy. OpenSea, Devin Finzer was just like sitting at the booth trying to get people to check out NFTs and talk about them and all this. And hey, fine. It's, you know, it's got a nice little logo and all that. But so it was just a really small bespoke crypto conference. Good networking. Like all the art there was, you know, Bitcoin focused art. It was definitely crypto art, not digital art or NFT art. So it was neat. It was a neat experience. Got to have a little bit of that OG in the NFT sense experience. And then, you know, this was one of the prizes for answering a question to a panel. There was actually a really great panel on sports and NFTs. And I had a great question because that's what I do. I think of questions. I talk a lot. You know this. And so they rewarded me with a great CryptoKitties onesie, which I've saved and I will save forever because it's like, it's the best. It's really comfortable actually too. It's a little small for me. I'm a little bit of a husky fella, but it's fun to wear for podcasts.
Well, if you ever outgrow it, feel free to send it over. I'll make good use of it.
No, this is going down to my kids. This is in the family.
This is in the family lineage for generations. Yeah. In like three generations, they're going to find this CryptoKitties onesie in a box in the basement and they're going to be like, what was this?
Hung up in plastic. Plastic, preserved, well preserved. I am gonna strip down a little bit because it's really hot in here. So I'm wearing my Ethereum underneath. So we're just repping crypto swag.
All right. We'll allow it. So you mentioned you were working at Status back then. I know your background is actually in communications and media. You have your PhD in communications and media from way back. How did that take you down the Web3 rabbit hole? Because I would say that isn't the typical route for somebody with a PhD in communications.
Yeah, not a technical PhD. So a lot of the other academics that I meet are in computer science or physics or chemistry. And I was always interested in new media systems. Like when social media erupted on the scene, how are people using Twitter? What is this? What are the features and how does it work? How do people adopt it and then make it their own? And I was interested in that mainly with video games and gaming systems. Because at the time, this was early 2000s, there wasn't a lot of gamers who were actually doing the science and research on game effects. It was mostly people who had seen games and said, hey, we got to do something about this, and then investigated it as a problem. So that was my area of research throughout the 2000s. And I got my PhD, became a professor. I was a professor for 9 years. I got tenure. I was the chair of my department. I was like full academic track for a very long time. And I published on game mechanics and effects and learning behavior and other new media sorts of things. But then when you get tenure, you can research whatever you want. That's actually what it's for. And so I was like, all right, let me take a break of games for a minute and just investigate some other new technologies. And so it was machine learning and data science or virtual reality or, hey, what's this Bitcoin thing? I don't know about it, but none of my friends do either. And then it was like smart contracts, down the rabbit hole, here we go. And I was like, this is really, really cool because the way that incentives work here, they're incentives to create community participation, to secure an actual system. And then with those incentives, you can help expand the system. And like, there was just a lot of really cool mechanics at play that just grabbed my curiosity as, you know, somebody interested in new media systems and digital systems. So that sent me down the rabbit hole. And I started trying to research that from a social science perspective in 2017, 2018. But then I pretty quickly got a job offer to leave academia and start doing crypto. And so I worked for a number of different projects and eventually founding my own.
Amazing. So back then, when you say new media systems, what was the new media system that you saw?
So the way that people had researched video game effects was the same way they would research television effects. So like, if you see something on TV, you observe it, therefore you learn it, and you can replicate it, and you might choose to or not. And that's like this really basic model of learning, and that's not really quite how it works. It's not as simple as that. But that's the way people had approached video games. They say, well, if you see the content that's on the screen, you're learning it, and therefore you choose whether or not to replicate that. And the content in video games that they were seeing was all this violence, Mortal Kombat and shooters, and like all that stuff. And so there was, you know, the great moral panic over video games. And I was a video game player, and I knew for years, like, that was just bullshit. Like, that's not how it works. Like, you don't just see something and learn it and then decide to do it or not. It's a far more complex system of behavior. And this really clicked with me while I was playing World of Warcraft. I was a WoW player. Priest, healer, if anybody, Alliance, you know, hey, anyways. But what was really interesting about the game was not necessarily the content that we saw, but it was the mechanics of the game that you actually interact with. And so in Warcraft, for example, you have a spell and you click the button to cast it, and then it's on a countdown timer. And while that's counting down so you can cast it again, you can click another spell. And so the actual game of combat is like, what spells are on cooldown and which ones aren't, and what's the order you can do them in to fight your foe. And that's the game. It's about resource maximization and doing this. And there's all sorts of examples of that in Warcraft and many other games. Like in shooters, the game isn't to kill. The game is to hit a target at a precise location. The narrative content is to get a headshot, which is like this brutal, horrible thing in reality. But in the game, it's about skill. What are the mechanics of your actual controller, and how do you drop your target onto a precise location at the given moment, and these sorts of things. So that was my research, is saying like, well, what's in these mechanics, and how are people learning mechanics, and where does that extend, as opposed to this visual content. We see visual content all the time. That doesn't necessarily mean some sort of outcome.
Gotcha. Okay. So that sort of makes sense and ties into what you're working on now with Infinity Keys. But I want to sort of take a step back for a second. You were just talking about video games. And I think most of the time when people hear games, especially in the context of Web3, that is where people's heads go to, is video games or computer games. But there are actually so many more applications of games to various parts of the Web3 ecosystem, to DAOs as a big example. So just to sort of set the stage, since we're going to be talking about games for the bulk of this episode, how do you think about or define games?
Yeah, I love games. First of all, like just a game player in general. And so a lot of times people find out I'm into games and they want to come up and they want to like compete with me. I'm not competitive. I'm happy to lose. I love just seeing how the systems work and helping people figure out games. Like I get a kick out of listening to how people explain a game, like a tabletop game. If you've like play a board game and get together with friends, how people explain them. Like this is what I geek out on. It's just like, how do people understand rules and systems? And so to me, that's kind of like the core at what game is. It is some system. It is some other system of rules and set of objectives, but it is also supposed to be an experience that provokes a feeling of play. This is one of the things to me that's really important about a game, and what's different from a game versus just a system where you have to interact and maximize potential or whatever that happens to be, is there's this sort of feeling of play, this sort of feeling of fun. And that feeling can manifest itself differently with many different people. With me, I've got kids. And so like, I just love delight. Like, ooh, cool. I like the way those things fit together. That is a neat outcome. I love that. Even in competitive games, if I lose, like if I'm playing poker, I'm terrible at poker. I lose my money because like, I want to see a cool hand. I want to see a royal flush come out or whatever it happens to be. And that is the experience for me. So there's this rule, there's the system, but then there's this feeling of play. Can I do this? Can I accomplish this? But other people, like that manifests as competitiveness. It's like, can I manipulate the rules of the system in a way that lets me have the victorious outcome? That's fun for different people. But that's really core to me, is that feeling of play, that experience within some system.
I almost felt like you were subtweeting me while you were saying that, because I'm 100% in that bucket of people who play games for the competitive aspect of it. And I absolutely have to win. Like my husband won't play board games with me because he says I'm a sore loser and a sore winner, which I would disagree with. I think he's just projecting his own personality onto me. But anyway, that is super interesting that you see games as like the underlying layer of that is that it provokes a feeling of play or of fun. So with that in mind, moving beyond, you know, video games or computer games or board games, the traditional types of games that we think of, how can we use games or gamified activities in various aspects of the Web3 ecosystem, for example, in DAOs or in DeFi or in the NFT space. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I actually think there's already a ton of unintentional games that have been made. You can read this in some of the language in terms of a metagame or the way a community develops its own language and sort of behaviors in a Discord or in a Telegram or whatever it is. There are particular systems, right? There's ranks sort of in a community. There's OGs, there's founders, there's people who have governance rights, people who don't, people who are speculators, meme creators. These sorts of things happen in the way they interplay because crypto and Web3 is like a little bit rude. It's like a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Like it has this, a new community energy, you know, a new technology energy that people make games automatically. Because game systems, they don't have to be like formal and very specific and highly, you know, regulated like chess. Chess is a really formal game system. You know the exact rules, you know the exact system. It's very specific. But if you compare that to a game like Monopoly, where, yeah, there's a set of rules, but really people just kind of play how they want. They make their own house rules and like, you know, there's different rules for different households about free parking and what you do with fees and like bidding and all that sort of stuff. People just make games. And so first of all, humans, like just people, we do think in terms of systems and understanding our role in them. And we tend to make games out of those because of some really cool evolutionary psychology reasons. And so in Web3, we already have a lot of that because we have these tokens with like goofy names and these weird ideas about how we incentivize people and meme culture, but then there's actual real value attached. I think games and gamification sort of just emerge naturally out of a lot of these. And now once you get a feeling for that, once you're in a community that kind of does that and it's vibing and you feel that go, then it's like, okay, well, how do we formalize this? How do we make sure that people who come in also can experience this? Because when you get that, it leads to these really cool outcomes where you meet people and you build these community connections and you're highly engaged and you believe in a project and a community and a group and you feel like you're a part of that. Especially what's interesting in crypto is it's all digital. Like you don't have to be in person to experience these things. And so people are starting to look at like, well, how do we get those game-like experiences, even if they're not game-like, but if they feel game-like, into our communities? There's a ton of other game sort of examples in crypto. GameFi, for example, or owning your own assets for a traditional game or whatever that happens to be. But when I think about the potential for games in crypto, it's about community and it's about engagement. And it's about like, how do people have fun together? Like, how do we play this co-op game together if the rules aren't always clearly defined, if we don't know exactly what everybody's doing all the time?
Yeah, for sure. And that's something that I've spoken to David Phelps about from JokeDAO is instead of this like age old way of building relationships that we're used to, which is trauma bonding, why don't we flip that and bond and form relationships based off of fun and games, like you're saying? And that's something that I wonder if there is this like playfulness at the core of just human nature, because when we teach children things, we try to make everything fun and make everything a game. And that's how they learn. And that's how we're able to engage them and grab their attention. But for some reason, somewhere along the line, that sense of fun just drops off. Like once you become an adult, you're not allowed to have fun anymore. You have to just read this boring textbook and learn that way. And we don't need to like come up with creative ways to make this a fun activity for you anymore because you're an adult now and you should just be able to endure this suffering.
So there's this long study, evolutionary psychology history of play, of like, what are the evolutionary roots of play? And creatures across the animal kingdom engage in play. So if you think about like dogs, they engage in wrestling as a form of play with their brothers and sisters and pack mates and even adults as a form of play. And really it's rehearsal. And so play is about learning. And one of the best things you could do, parent here, and so if there's other parents, here's a parenting tip. One of the best things you can do sometimes is let your kid play, no screens, just like leave them alone and let them figure out whatever they're doing. Don't jump in. Don't try to help them. Just shut up and back off because they're engaging in those sorts of things. And kids, you know, throughout time have loved doing mimicry play. So they'll play store. It's the most boring game in the world. You pick up an item, you pretend to buy it, and you put it in a cart and you leave. It's terribly boring. But for kids, right, it's this rehearsal sort of thing and it's fun and all this other stuff sort of happens. So that's like built into youth across species. That's a cross species phenomenon, which is cool. You don't find many of those.
Yeah, for sure. And once kids figure out, you know, how they can play together, like if you put two or three kids in a room by themselves without any iPads or phones or anything, and you're like, figure it out. Once they figure out how to play together, I think that is a bonding moment for them. And that brings them closer together. The same thing I think is true for adults too. And that's something that we've tried to build into Rehash as well with our guest nomination and voting process on JokeDAO, is this sense of playing a game. It's been really interesting to see the way that people have approached this voting period. Some people kind of jump in and they're like, I know I want to vote for Andy. I'm throwing all my votes on Andy right now. And that's it. But other people will wait until the last hour or even the last few minutes of the voting period to see who those guests are that are right on the edge that they can maybe bump up or push down out of the rankings. And so that's been a really interesting activity. I think it's brought people closer together too, you know, because people will kind of like jokingly shit talk each other, or they'll try to like band together and collude with each other to get their favorite guests on the list. It's been a really interesting thing to see.
If we look at political process, the way it's covered is as a game. It is as a race. And it feels very, you know, political and real. It has real world effects, but it also feels very like tribal and competitive. Like, what do we need to do to win? And when your candidate, you know, gets a big fundraising victory and hits a milestone, people lord that over each other like it's a sports team or whatever. So like, there's these examples there where people just naturally do that. And so when it comes up, this is a very straightforward voting process. There's a certain amount of votes that you can allocate for who you want to hear on this podcast. And how do you allocate them? You just pick one or two or three or more. But we automatically turned it into a game, because as soon as it comes up, it's like, well, what's my strategy here? How do I optimize? And that used to be play, and now it is still playful. That's the difference. It's like, it's still playful, even though it's not play. It has real outcomes. Like, I really want to be on this podcast. I've been nominating myself for the past couple seasons. I come all the time. I listen, you know. So it was really important to me. So like, how do I strategize and really do this well? My strategy paid off. It was a long game, but it paid off.
It sure did. So even using this as an example, I think something interesting to think about is like, what makes a good game from a bad game, right? And like, even in designing this so-called game that is our voting process, we've played around with a few different options. And I think there's always a question about how detailed do you design this game versus letting the players kind of like make up their own game, you know? And you were sort of talking about this earlier with games like Monopoly, for example, that have a set of rules, but they're not so stringent, like in chess, for example, where there's still a lot of room in Monopoly for people to play their own game, to have their own strategy and play it their own way. When you think about a good game versus a bad game, and maybe tell us how you define that first, what are some of the major differences you see between the two?
I love this question. Thank you. So the first thing to address is emergence. So it's amazing when you don't define the game and something emergent happens and people kind of get it and they start playing along and they understand it. Those emergent phenomena really strongly build communities. And if you can get emergence, then by all means, lean into emergence as a community builder, like as a project. If you're thinking like, how do I get my community to like vibe and play games and just, you know, connect with each other? Sometimes you got to let stuff happen. And when it does happen, you own it and you ride it. And that's the best. But making emergence happen is so hard. Like you can't, it just doesn't happen. Like you can't do that. That's what it is. It's emergent phenomena. Like you can't put all the ingredients for a cake together and just hope a cake happens. Like you have to be active. You have to do things in this way. So not everything works that way. But an approach for emergence to happen is community. And so you can make games that community want to engage with and people like. And the first step is you can't frustrate people away from your game. If they come there and it's frustrated, it's over, they leave. That's the biggest problem. And that's the biggest problem with most games is it's hard to figure out the controls and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do and I'm bored, whatever. You're always competing for attention. So the first steps are you got to make really clear rules and expectations. And your game has to adhere to the rules. Like, whatever rules you make, make those rules clear, and then make sure your game adheres to the rules. It sounds really simple, but that ends up being a ton of your user experience. Is people come in and they're expecting one thing, and they get another thing and they can't figure it out, they're gone. And so nothing's going to happen. That's the most important part. With crypto and Web3, that's especially challenging because sometimes the hard stuff, like the clear stuff, is in what wallet you're using and what chain you're on. I'm like, can I switch chains and what's compatibility? And like, that's our biggest challenge right now. And Infinity Keys is like, where do I mint this? Our users ask. And we're like, well, try here. Anyways, so a good game adheres to the rules. And then there is this surprise and delight. So how do you design a game that leads to surprise and delight? There's a lot of ways to do this. So chess is actually a good example. It leads to surprise and delight because there are many pieces that do many things. And because they do so many things, they lead to situations that you've never seen before. There's uniqueness. Almost every game of chess is like unique or almost impossible to replicate after so many moves, right? Because, and so that's that delight is like, oh, what do I do now in this situation? For us, for Infinity Keys, we tend to make puzzles, and the delight comes when somebody solves a puzzle. So if you come to Infinity Keys and you look at the challenge and you solve it, you feel good. And that feeling, like that's what we're going for, is that's the payout. And when we started, I've told you this before, when we started, we used to make them hard because, you know, you want to give people a real challenge. So when they overcome it, they feel fantastic. Well, we don't do that anymore. We do have some hard challenges, but most of them are pretty easy. And they're easy because we're not in the game of punishing people. We're in the game of making people feel good. That's what people want in a game, is they want to do something, feel like they've overcome it, and not just like I did my task, but like have that, you know, that dopamine, you know, juice in their brain and be like, yeah, got it. And then move forward. So that surprise and delight, that's how you make a good game. And there's so many ways to do that. If I could explain how to do that very specifically, then every video game publisher in the world would come knocking on my door, because that's the hard things. Like, how do you, what's that like thing that people do that they always keep coming back for? But so those are really important. Clear rules, surprise and delight players. And then for us, we try to leave players with something learned at the end, like an experience you can think back on. And so NFTs happen to be really good for that, because you can get something. You're like, oh yeah, I won this trophy. I got this award. And then for us, it's really also important to do no intentional harm. Like when you're making a game, to think critically and thoughtfully about like, what are the outcomes of this? What are the processes of this? And don't harm other people.
What would be an example of harm, whether intentional or unintentional, at the end of a game?
Emotional harm, taking people to a place where they don't want to be or didn't expect to be and then also don't want to be. So games have this really great emotional power if used. So a lot of people are playing Last of Us right now, and it has these emotional hooks in it that pull you along. And there are a lot of games like that. Some of them aren't very well known, but there's some games that take you through a story journey, a journey of, you know, battling cancer. And it's not a shooter or a fun action game. It's like, it's an emotional experience game. And so when you make these games, we want to ensure that people are being treated appropriately and ethically. Or for our case, we want to make sure we're not making promises that we can't keep. So yeah, we're awarding people with trophies that are NFTs. But like, we don't go out and say, these NFTs are really going to rise in value. No, they're game pieces. We're really clear about that. So you're not playing this game to speculate. You're playing this game to play a game and be part of a community. And if there's speculative value, we have nothing to do with that. These are just like game pieces. So those are the sorts of things, especially in crypto. I think there is potential harm in terms of speculation, because that's what our incentives, that's how they're aligned, is people are already thinking about those things. And even me, right? If I look at a project, it's hard not to speculate on things. And that takes a lot of discipline as a player, just to be like, or a user, like for a Rehash, like I'm in Rehash because I like podcasts and I think the information is valuable. So I'm not here to speculate. I got to participate meaningfully, as opposed to, you know, a game like Infinity Keys, you're getting treasure. Like that's part of our thing, is like, we have to be really clear. What is treasure, so that we don't promise things that we can't deliver on or shouldn't deliver on?
Yeah, for sure. Before we dive deeper into Infinity Keys, I had one question about something you alluded to a couple of times, and it's this notion of storytelling in games. For me, as somebody who didn't grow up playing video games or computer games or any of that, when I got older and met people who, you know, really like delighted in games, and I try to understand it, I thought a lot of the delight and a lot of the draw comes from the narrative and the storytelling that happens in these video games. But it seems to me that the couple of times that you brought it up, it seems to me that you've almost diminished that as a value to games in some way. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts, especially with your background in communications and media, how you view the role of storytelling and narrative in games.
Many different players play games for many different reasons. So that's really the nugget. When we think about like designing a good game, really what I should have said is for who? Who's your game for? Because World of Warcraft is a fantastic example. People play games to be competitive. You can be competitive in World of Warcraft. People play games to socialize and just like make friends. It's an MMO. There's chat. You can do that. People make games to live in a fantasy world. Like, it's set up for that. There is this story. There is this fantasy. There's this narrative and a bunch of other reasons as well. So different kinds of games speak to different groups of players. And for me, I don't play for story that much personally. Like, it's okay, but I never really have. I play for challenge. I like solving puzzles and feeling good about that. Even in competitive games, that's just how I play. But I don't mean to diminish the role of story. Some people definitely play for the story and they don't always need a hard challenge, or they don't need competition, or they don't need those other things. You can get different pieces of your video game needs in different ways. So for Infinity Keys, for example, there are these puzzle challenges, but we do sprinkle a little bit of story on there. So it's not thick, it's not heavy, it's not pages. It's usually a sentence or two and an image. Enough to put you in the world and perspective so you can be like, okay, I'm a gangster, right? That's what we have out today is, you know, you're a gangster in Miami. But all you need is a little bit for our game to put you in that mode, take you to the next one and do that theming. So that's the answer, is it depends.
For sure. Would you say that in DAOs, when we think about gamifying aspects of DAOs, that the audience we're building the game for most likely is after that community building, that socializing aspect of, you know, why people play games?
Yeah, DAOs are, even if it's not formally a DAO, but like a community in a Discord around an NFT project, there's some shared value there. And so the thing that people tend to want to do is say, what makes us us? What's special about me in this group and this group? What do we do here? And you need a story around that. You got to have a core narrative around what that is. Even, you know, non-DAOs or non-Discords, like working for any company, not just a crypto company, but working for any company, what's special about us? The school that I was at when I was a professor is like, we have this unique identity. And that's something that we talk about a lot. It's part of the cultural lore. It's part of who we are. The students understood it. The professors understood it. That's just sort of a cultural identity that organizations take on. Games can do that. So that's why I like games, is because they have the option to kind of highlight, here's things about this community that make us unique or different or special in some way. And here's how we talk about it. Here are our memes. Here's how we do them. So Infinity Keys, for example, we do a lot of puzzles and ciphers. And so we don't say GM, we say 713, which is, if you do the number substitution, G is the seventh number, M is the 13th number. So everybody just says 713. And it's dumb. And it's like, just quirky. It's like a meme. It's not a big deal. But it's a part of that story. Like, oh yeah, we're puzzle makers. And if you come into the chat and you say GM, we say 713 back to you. It's like part of an initiation ritual and things like that. So
yeah, I love that you guys do that. So speaking of Infinity Keys, let's back up for a second. We've alluded to Infinity Keys a bunch already in this episode, and people probably have some sense of Infinity Keys as this treasure hunting platform. But I actually got quite a few questions from Discord and from the Twitter community about what actually is Infinity Keys? Is it a treasure hunt platform? Is it a gaming platform? Is it a task rewards platform? There's so many different aspects of Infinity Keys, and I think different people, depending on their interests, you know, see it in a different light. So why don't you clear it up for people and let's hear it from the man himself. What is Infinity Keys?
Well, I actually like that people have sort of different perspectives on what it is, because that shows me, what do they want to use it for? Because we are creating a platform that other people can use to build game-like experiences. And at its core, game experiences and gamification experiences are task reward setups, right? It's a system. You do a thing, you get a thing, good job, you feel good. And that's sort of the challenge payout model. But to me, that is a game. We can set up some requirement that you do, and we can put a whole bunch of fluff around that, an image, a story, a theme, and then you get a payout reward. Maybe it's a trophy, a meaningless trophy. Maybe it's a high five. Maybe there is actual tangible treasure with financial value attached to it. Infinity Keys is a platform. So we call it a gamified task reward platform. So right now, if you go to Infinity Keys and you click play, we have it framed as a game that you can play and go and solve challenges. But these challenges, some of them are just for fun challenges. They're kind of the native Infinity Keys ones. But some of them we work with partners and partner projects so that the players can get sort of onboarded and understand what is this project. Now, the way that we frame it, that we're a little bit different, is it's not do task, now get NFT, it is a theme. There is a story. There are these games where you are a character in some kind of story. So if you want to get into Infinity Keys, it is not, this is a gamified task reward platform. And if you do this onboarding activity, now you are a member and can join the Discord. You're in a Mystic Library. You have got to find your way out. You've got to solve these puzzles. And then our puzzles have the theme so that you can move forward. And it doesn't always have to be a thick, laid on heavy theme, like I said before. Sometimes it's, you know, a little flimsy, if I could be honest, as a guy who likes deep lore narrative, especially in my fiction. But that's okay, because we're not trying to, you know, write a fantasy novel. What we're trying to do is get people to play along with the game, have those good feeling experiences, and then do the tasks and then do rewards.
Yeah. So it's almost like a virtual escape room.
Yeah, you can use it to build that. So I just had a guy in the Discord tell me, this is what Infinity Keys seems like to me, is like, I can build my own ARG, our augmented reality game. And I said, yeah, absolutely. It's a platform where you can do that. But we can also do it to reward people for doing a series of tasks at an event. So we're doing some at ETH Denver for a number of people. There's a bunch of Infinity Keys tasks that you can do, games that you can play at ETH Denver and collect some treasures. Or like, you can just make a cool, almost even like a POAP, you can set it up and be like, enter the passcode and get the thing. I think that's boring, but you can do it.
A lot of people have asked, you know, is Infinity Keys similar to one of those learn to earn platforms like Layer 3 or Rabbit Hole? And I guess it sounds like the answer is no, but you can use it similar to Layer 3 or Rabbit Hole if you so choose. Like if you're a project that wants to have your users do a task and reward them in some way, and that's your only goal.
You can do that. Here's the big difference. Right now, we are a platform building a platform and a community. So there's a technology and a community. And that community of people also builds games. So this puzzle we just launched today with TexturePunks. TexturePunks is this NFT project. We did a launch puzzle with them just, you know, on their launch to have something fun. And then their community got into it and they wanted more. And so one of their members of their community had some ideas. And so we built the next stage. There's like three jobs you got to do for the next mission. He created one of those and we helped in that process. The goal of Infinity Keys and where we're going is a community of people that create different game modules, and specifically game modules, so that if you're a project and you come, you're like, okay, I want to onboard people, but I don't want to just like give out tokens and say, log in here, click Discord here, but you want a good story and some good art. We've got the people who know how to do that. And we've got a platform where people can set that up and build templates and build modules that you can then, and we'll see where the economy goes from there. We don't have a mapped out economy for all of that, but that is the goal, is to have a community that builds games together and is incentivized to build games and work with other projects to create these things. So that's thing one, is like communities build game experiences, not just tasks to do stuff. The other piece of it is, we focus really hard on composable game pieces. So there's an achievement for this TexturePunks one that we made. There's like this overarching achievement. We can use that achievement NFT as a requirement in another PFP. So right now we're working with a couple of games and we've made one for this game. We also have this overarching achievement where you have to get the final achievement in game one, game two, and game three. And now you've got like this superstar achievement. And what's also happened is the three communities that come and play those games are now crossing over and working with each other. So we're really leaning into composability and creator content. The ideal scenario, and this is a future thing, is that I've got nothing to do with the process, and somebody who's just a fan of Rehash shows up and decides to make their own Rehash quest. And they can click the buttons and go on chain and submit the thing, and they've got a challenge that goes up. And then it goes to the community to see where does that challenge get promoted and marketed and all those sorts of things. So that's how we're a little different, is we focus on that game aspect. When I see something like Layer 3 or Rabbit Hole or PoApps, like I love all of those. I collect all of those because I want those to be game pieces. I want to go get a PoApp and then use that as a requirement for an Infinity Keys game where, you know, you're off in some futuristic landscape doing this, that, and the other. And then you've got to go into Sandbox, into a metaverse experience and get something else, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because we're using composable assets, we can just use them to build on top of each other.
Amazing. Sorry, there's a spider crawling on my wall. I'm going to kill it real quick. Give me 2 seconds.
Spider murder. I'm going to take off this onesie.
Yeah, that sounds super amazing. I'm actually curious if you would entertain this hypothetical of if a member from the Rehash community, like you were just, posturing were to decide to create a quest or a game for Rehash, what are some possible games that they could create for Rehash using Infinity Keys?
Well, I have made one Rehash game. If the OGs want to explore, this is in the days where we were making harder challenges, so it might be a little more difficult to solve this one. There's some ciphers, some encryption or decryption you got to do. Rehash is community powered. I think that's really valuable. Rehash has some interesting memes that come and go. The thin crust meme, you know, it hasn't seen daylight in a little while, but it still comes up once in a while. This is where I start. It's like, what are the core things that you want people to do? And for Rehash, we want people to listen. And so, you know, you can embed passcodes in podcast episodes. Or what's really fun to do is there's this episode and I just say some phrase that we like gamified experiences or whatever it is. You can make an anagram out of that and then pull it back over. And what's a theme, right? A theme you're listening in for secret messages from the Web3 DAO space. You know, DAOs are really interesting because it's like community minds come together to make emergent things happen. And so maybe the DAO consciousness has emerged out of one of these episodes and embedded hidden messages. That's a pretty good story, right? There's some pretty cool art that we could do based on that too. That would be fun. And then you just find hidden messages in these. Another thing that we could do, so we can do passcodes. That's pretty easy. But we also require NFTs. So maybe you have to go be a collector and you got to go collect an episode or a series of episodes. Maybe a series of episodes that the numbers together, if you put them together, there's a word that comes out of it, right? And so, you know, you like GM, right? Episode 7 and episode 1 and episode 3 of season 4 is the GM. Oh, that's actually a really good one.
Ooh, we should do that. Should I cut this out so we can do it and people won't already know about it? Okay.
Here's one of the principles of games is you just tell everybody what the answer is. It's fine because most people don't pay attention. They don't read or they skip over. And so later, if they go back and find it, they've done the homework and they still get the payout and they feel good. And that feels really good. So that is actually... And if you actually go look at all the games that you've played, there's very few that have secrets. Like any good mystery movie, they tell you who the killer is right away. Like at the end, you're like, oh yeah, of course, it has to be. So leave it in.
That's a good idea. I was also just like, my juices were flowing as you were saying that. And I was thinking about, what if we embedded a hidden secret word in each episode? And it's like something totally random. Like it could be like pineapple for this episode, and we figure out a way to weave it in supernaturally, so that not supernaturally but like very in a very natural way, so that people don't suspect it. But if you listen really closely, you can decipher that. And then we could even combine it with a visual component and have this like hidden Easter egg thing in our cover image of each episode with, you know, a little pineapple in maybe the back pocket of Andy's pants or something.
There might be a pineapple on this onesie. I don't actually know.
Yeah. See, if we just drew a pineapple on there, nobody would even suspect it.
What's cool about this is, especially dealing with on-chain assets, like this podcast was just, it's there as long as Ethereum is there, as long as Polygon's there, is people can go back and find this stuff anytime, like in 10 years, ideally. As long as like kind of the circumstances for the clues haven't changed, then you should be able to find a passcode, enter it and let it go and mint an NFT, and that NFT should be good. Or if you go and you buy one of these texture punks that I was just talking about on OpenSea in 5 years, you can go and do the things there. That to me is one of like the really cool things about Web3 gaming is like this permanence and permissionlessness of these assets. And if those are game pieces, then a game that we make today for Rehash about season 4 should last for a very, very long time. And that's like a juicy Easter egg. And to me, like what really excites me about that is that's the metaverse, like having deep history with stuff, having a patina on the world. Like you can go to any park and, you know, something's happened there and you got to find the plaque and read about it. And there's history on things. That's what we need. And that's what we can build with these sort of systems is like there's stuff built up where you can do achievements and connect the dots together and feel this real meaning. And so it feels real and authentic because it is, because it's built by a community of people and it's backed by these assets that have been there forever. That's where I hope that emergent phenomena come out that take us to kind of a new level of understanding what is metaverse, what are these digital experiences that we have.
Totally. One question I did have for you, and this is, you know, sort of just playing devil's advocate or seeing the negative side of things a little bit, but obviously there's a lot of cool stuff we can do with Infinity Keys. One concern I have, though, and this is kind of going back to what we were talking about with the task rewards platform a little bit, is that it seems that once rewards are involved, that it becomes really hard to incentivize valuing doing that actual task that needs to be done. And this is like a common criticism that people have with learn to earn platforms like Layer 3 or Rabbit Hole, is that you get a lot of just like spammy people coming in that just want the free NFT and don't really care about the task that you're trying to get people to do and the things that you're actually trying to get people to learn from completing the task. Do you think that, you know, creators or brands or whoever using Infinity Keys could actually run the risk of harming their community more than they're helping it by developing these more transactional relationships with their fans and customers instead of, you know, long-term values aligned ride or die relationships that every brand or creator wants to actually build with their community?
Make good games. I think that's really the key. So yeah, I do think giving people money to do stuff is a problematic incentive. I think crypto and Web3 really has to look hard, especially after the last year, and say, is that all we got? Like, we're a bunch of creative people building at the edge of technology and society. Is that really what we got? Is like, we're just going to bribe people with tokens that we made up? Like, I do think it's important to have some stake in the game and to figure out what those incentives are. But having that as the only incentive, it doesn't work, right? Or it only works to an extent, or it only works for some subset of problems and communities and things like that. So one is, I think we got to try it. Regardless, even if it doesn't work, I think we have to. I think crypto and Web3 is at a critical place where we know financial incentives work for securing networks. They work really well, but we don't know how well they work for communities and governance. It's rare when you have one that's just fully successful, that's not totally dependent on the value of a token, and we need to do better. And so let's make some incentives that don't involve that. For me, that's games. Let's make some games where you don't just do tasks, but you play. You're part of a community. You create, you have those feelings of delight and surprise, because what we see in our community is we don't give away treasure. We give away NFTs that we call treasure, but like, they're NFTs that you're selling for $5 max. They're really cheap. We buy them off the market with partners, and they're, you know, small value things, because we don't want to just get into that whole value trap yet. What we want is people to engage and play and engage with us. And we see that when you give people games to play, not everybody, you know, 100 people come in and not every 100 of them can play every game, but we do get a subset that stick around and they say, okay, what's next? Oh, cool. I solved this one. All right. I'm going to just, you know, finish things here. So one, yeah, I do think that's a danger, but two, I think we have to try something. And three, because there are other incentives that do work, and game incentives do work with or without financial incentives for at least some subset of the population. The other piece of this is like, non-Web3 brands have been doing financial incentives, coupons and membership points and bonuses and discounts for years. And there is a subset of the population that only will shop at a given store if they have the coupon. Bed Bath & Beyond, right? Like, I'm not going to Bed Bath & Beyond unless I got the coupon for it. That's very transactional. But on the other hand, I know that name and you know it, and it's got a really successful campaign, and people will go there and say, well, I'll go here for my wedding registry. And so by building that brand loyalty, they do actually achieve success in that way. So there are productive models around that, even if using incentive systems that have been in practice for decades. We just got to figure out like what that balance is between the tasks and between the payout. And with tokens, it's weird, you know, because if you give out tokens as rewards, you're diluting your own supply, and all of a sudden your economic model isn't great. And then the rest of your community isn't super happy necessarily. And so there is a kind of a tough model in there that I don't think we've quite figured out yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is the $1 million question, is how do we find that balance? And whoever figures it out or has any ideas, hit us up, because we would love to know.
I got the idea. So let's try to make some games. That's one thing. We give people two sets of incentives, or multiple sets, not even two, but you give people some financial incentive. There will be some payout for you financially that'll impact your wallet. You give people a community incentive. There are people who like you and who you like, who you want to do this with. And now let's give them some game incentives. Let's let them have fun. Let's have them have surprise and delight, have a feeling of overcoming or a feeling of competition. And through that, we can build that community feeling and build that engagement and lead to some of these other incentives that hopefully aren't only financially aligned.
Love that. Any final thoughts, Andy, before we wrap up about Infinity Keys, about games, about anything that we talked about today?
I love the Rehash community. That's what I really want to talk. I appreciate you launching this and like taking a risk on a cool idea of, you know, community sourcing out this podcast. And it's been awesome being in the Discord and the people that come through. A big shout out to Karsten, who's always there and who nominated me and who's super cool. Ellie and Tyler as well. And everybody who voted for me. I appreciate that very, very much. But this is a cool little squad and I like where it's been and I like where it's going. And big shout out to Rehash. Everybody should join. Wow. Come to those weekly meetings.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you so much for that shout out. And if you do want to join, know that each episode is available for mint as a podcast NFT. You can go and collect this episode with Andy if you enjoyed listening to it. There are going to be 20 editions available of each episode. So the first 20 people to grab this will own a piece of Andy's brain forever.
Access. You show me you own this NFT, I'll give you a free idea. I got bangers that pop in there all day. Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Gotta be in person though.
What a steal. Awesome. Okay. Well, every episode we like to finish up with a game. And this season we're playing a new game. So you have no idea what this is yet, even if you've listened to previous episodes. So this season we're playing the word association game. Are you familiar with this game?
I just say a word.
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm going to say a word first. Okay. And then you're going to say the first word that pops into mind when you hear me say the word that I say. So we're going to do this super quick, rapid fire. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. It doesn't have to be good or make sense or anything. Ready?
Yeah, super ready.
First one. Layer one.
Zero.
Incentive.
Composability.
Primitive.
Bitcoin.
Permissionless.
Protocol.
Modular.
Architecture. Well, I was a crypto writer for a long time.
Wow. Meta governance.
Yeah. Metaguild.
Creator economy.
Uber. Oops. I don't know why Uber.
Uber.
Yeah, I feel like Uber and the creator economy.
I can see the link.
Yeah. Connected.
Merkle tree.
Vitalik.
Okay. We got two more here. DAO.
Decentralized is part of the word.
Yeah, that's not allowed. That's the only rule of the game.
Tropical.
Okay. And last one, composable.
Assets.
Okay. Why does DAO make you think of tropical?
In New York, there was this like relaxation getaway that was sort of DAO governed, wasn't it? It was a bunch of DAO people who were there and like there was meditation and breathing and the cold plunge.
Yeah.
And that whole place. And it was just like very tropical themed.
Yeah. Dan Hunt's house.
Yeah. It was really fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so like I have this like sort of calming experience with DAO. DAOs feel crunchy to me and sort of like tropical and sandy and like you're figuring it out a little bit. I don't know. It's just a feeling.
I like it. Okay, Andy, tell people where they can find you if they want to pick more of your brain, and tell people where they can go to check out Infinity Keys, maybe play a game or maybe set up a game for their community.
Yeah, infinitykeys.io. On the top, it says play. Click that button and then go play some challenges. There's a bunch there that you can do and try out. Discord is /infinitykeys, or you can find it on the website and at infinitykeys on Twitter, infinitykeys.lens on Lens. And I am Andy Boyan on Twitter and boyan.lens on Lens. And I am very online. So you can find me. Where you can find me is in the Rehash Discord. I'm in there. I'm Andy. I post and chat regularly. So please come and find me. We're trying to make some interesting experiences for projects of all sizes and kinds with Infinity Keys. And we want to make weird stuff and let other people make weird stuff, because I'm a weird guy and I want to help other people stay weird too. So come chat with me. Or if you're at ETH Denver, come and find us. There will be things that you want to find. Find the Infinity Keys crew. You know, look for a little bit of cool, you know, weirdness around, and then you'll probably find us.
So stoked for everything you guys have planned for ETH Denver. Shout out ETH. Speaking of ETH Denver, we're also going to have Rehash beanies for all of our NFT holders. So if you are at ETH Denver, make sure you can find me as well. Show me your Rehash NFT and you get a beanie. We also have stickers just for anybody. So if you see me, ask for a sticker and you've got it. But yeah, I'm so stoked to check out all your activations. I'm going to be following Andy around the whole weekend to see what goodies I can get and what treasures I can hunt for. So be ready for that.
We'll help you
Andy.
Find your way into some parties, things like that. You know, we got all sorts of prizes planned.
Okay. You may be auctioning off a CryptoKitties onesie.
No, this is mine.
Oh, damn it.
I'm not giving it to you. I know one other guy who has one, but I haven't talked to him in a couple of years. So I'll see if I can get it.
Send me his handle privately after this. All right. Thanks again so much, Andy. You're the best. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in as always. And we'll be back again next Thursday with another episode of Rehash.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Rehash. Rehash is hosted by Diana Chen, produced and edited by Ellie Dots and Tyler Internet, and sponsored by Lens, Empire Wallet, and NFT.storage. Rehash is also supported by Rehash DAO, a community of NFT holders who curate our guest lineup each season. To get involved, head over to our website at rehashweb3.xyz and collect this episode as an NFT. Anyone who collects an episode becomes a part of Rehash DAO and will be able to nominate guests for future seasons. Voting rights are reserved for our guests, sponsors, and OG crowdfund supporters. And to learn more about how to become a guest or sponsor, go to rehashweb3.xyz/podcast. Finally, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at RehashWeb3 or on Lens at rehash.lens.